Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session. Pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. Absolutely.
First case on our calendar is 99-2084, State of Ohio versus Mark Sadler.
Ms. Austria.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Randy Marie Austria, and I, along with my co-counsel, Kristen Woosnam, represent the State of Ohio, the appellant in this matter. At this time, the state wishes to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. The general issue facing this court this morning is whether the appellate court erred in reversing defendant's conviction for the constructive possession of large amounts of cocaine and heroin and remanding for resentencing on the actual amount delivered to the defendant. There are essentially three reasons why this case should be reversed. First, the facts before the conviction of the constructive possession of the original amount of drugs. Second, the appellate court essentially split the difference in this case and found defendant guilty of the actual possession, yet the evidence presented to the jury revealed defendant either constructively possessed the original amount of drugs or didn't possess any of the drugs because he had no knowledge. And third, public policy considerations mandate a reversal. The fact that law enforcement officials prevented the defendant from taking absolute control of the original amount of drugs should not lessen his culpability.
What if they had substituted all paper for all the drugs instead of just in part?
Well, Your Honor, I do believe still in that case the defendant would be charged with the constructive possession of the original amount of drugs because the amount of drugs that has legal consequence and significance is the amount which was intended to be received.
So the safer way for law enforcement to do it is to make sure that he doesn't get any drugs and we put paper in for everything. Why wouldn't they have done that?
That's a good question, and I don't know why the police would not have taken all the drugs out.
Maybe because they wanted him to have constructive possession of some drugs.
Well, but what this case held at the appellate level is the actual possession of some drugs and not the constructive possession of all the drugs. So really, the depending on the way this case goes, the better way for purposes of conviction would be to leave all the drugs intact. However, that presents a number of problems because as in one of the cases that's held in the United States versus Jackson, a package is delivered and it can go right out the back window and can leave the premises before SWAT actually descends and secures, and what we have then are large amounts of drugs on the street.
But isn't it fair also to say that if we decide the case in your direction or the way you want us to decide it, that they could totally substitute something for the drugs? Like, in total, they could.
Yes, if this court decides that the constructive possession of drugs relates back to the original amount, what the police could do is take all the drugs out and substitute it for dummy material completely.
Counsel, let's take that one step further.
What's wrong with that?
No drugs existed.
If we have the facts from, say, under your scenario, I would assume there would be undercover informants on behalf of the government corresponding with the defendant, because the defendant would be expecting a package, and whatever the arrangement would be, say, $16,500 for a kilo of cocaine, he would be expecting a kilo of cocaine, regardless then of what was in the package, if he had knowledge of what was his expectation.
If he was willing to enter into the transaction, even if no drugs ever existed, take Joseph Douglas's scenario and add it to it that the originator of the transaction is actually a government agent. No drugs ever existed. And you would find...
Most probably not in a constructive possession scenario, though. It perhaps would be for aggravated trafficking or maybe another offense. But for the constructive possession, I believe that drugs would have to exist, as in this case. So, but the original amount of drugs was present. And so in your scenario, in your hypothetical, I think that would pose a problem for the government, for the state, and the prosecution. But that's not what happened in this case. What we have in this case is the delivery of, or the attempted delivery, and expectation of receiving a kilo of cocaine and 50 grams of black tar heroin.
Well, because the possession and control seem to me to be the key to this case. The cases that are cited where there's been constructive possession based on control of dominion or control over the contraband all seem to have facts that are not in this case, such as the receiver had a tracking number, called UPS inquiring about the package. That's not true in this case. Isn't this case distinguished on its facts from the cases in which dominion and control have been found?
No, Your Honor, and you're correct where this case does hinge on a judicial interpretation of dominion and control. In this case, the state does not have a tracking number, does not have shipping documents, but what this case does have is testimony from four separate law enforcement officials that the defendant resided at his premises and stayed in the east bedroom. Found underneath his bed was a purple Crown Royal bag with $16,500 in it. There was testimony before the jury that $16,500 is what a kilo of cocaine would cost. A kilo of cocaine was in the original contents of the package.
Of course, we know all that, but I guess, does that suggest dominion and control over the package?
That links back the defendant, Mark Sather, what he had and the amount he had back to the original package. While it's not a tracking number of the original package, it is a link back to what was in the original package, which was a kilo of cocaine.
Wouldn't you have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that in order to establish constructive possession of that particular amount, by some evidence that he was expecting a kilo of cocaine? That seems to me to be the link that is missing in this case.
Well, the 16,000, the actual amount of what a kilo of cocaine would be, coupled with the fact that he was there at the premises at the time. He had a fellow with him by the nickname of Bo, Nassif Al-Sabor, who was in heroin withdrawals at the time. We also have a phone call from a person later identified as James Maxwell, who's the co-defendant in this case. While the premises were secured by SWAT and while the co-defendants were detained, Detective Deborah Harrison received a phone call at the time, about 25 to 30 minutes after the arrival of the package, asking about the delivery of the package. This co-defendant actually comes over for the purchase of drugs and was arrested in the parking lot. So here, those facts taken together allow a jury, a rational trier of fact, to infer knowledge from those circumstances.
I still see a missing link that I don't know how you could have constructive possession of a kilo of cocaine without establishing. So the other cases all have some other types of links, tracking, etc. I'm having a difficult problem seeing that established. And the fact that kilo was in the package, then we're confirmed it could be conclude that's what he was receiving because he had $16,000 in the house. I don't know.
Well, that's what the state has presented to the jury, and in reviews of sufficiency of the evidence cases, it's the standard is the appellate court's function, as you well know, Justice Resnick, is to examine the evidence submitted at trial to determine whether such evidence, if believed, would convince the average mind of the defendant's guilt. And significantly, it is the mind of the trier of fact and not the reviewing court that must be convinced. And the appellate court is precluded from substituting its judgment from that of the trial court. This is black letter law, but it's very significant in this case because the evidence that the state had, which I just related to, regarding also a fictitious name on a package, regarding the $16,500, regarding the phone call made for the delivery of the package, four separate law enforcement officers saying that the defendant stayed in the east bedroom, all kinds of money and drug paraphernalia found under the bed of the defendant, surveillance beforehand, which indicated that the defendant went out to check the mailbox, also indicating that he resided there. For him now to claim that he had knowledge, a jury of his peers believed that he had knowledge of the contents of the package and that he had an intent to receive that which was delivered, that which was expected to be delivered to him.
The question, of course, is a legal question of sufficiency. That's where the Court of Appeals, that's the direction that they used to reverse on the constructive possession. And it seems the argument, in terms of legal sufficiency, the argument posed by the state revolves around sufficient nexus. Would you say that's the proper analysis we should take to evaluate the sufficiency here? I mean, a trier of fact being convinced is only important once legal sufficiency is met and as a matter of law. So is it nexus that we should be looking to assess legal sufficiency?
In this case, I do believe that, yes, you do look at the fact, which includes the nexus, a link between the defendant and the package.
Yes.
Is that the nexus you're speaking of, the sufficiency of that particular link?
Yeah, I think that's where the court assessed that there was insufficient evidence as a matter of law to put this to the jury. And so I guess, and it seemed that they thought there was not enough connection between the package and the defendant for purposes of constructive possession.
But in this case, when there's a reversal such as that, when we look at these facts, it appears to be legally inconsistent to reverse and remand as the appellate court did on the actual possession, because in this case, the defendant either had knowledge of the contents of the package for constructive possession purposes, or he didn't have any knowledge at all, and it was as he claimed it was when he took the stand. He didn't reside there. He had no idea what was in the package. He was merely doing someone a favor. He was there to fix her car. So the jury believed the credibility of the law enforcement official in this. What the appellate court did was really split the difference and remand for something that wasn't even in a fact pattern, and the state believes is legally inconsistent. And I see that I'm out of time.
Let me just ask you a question. Did you know the appellee has cited to its U.S. versus Jackson, which is a Sixth Circuit case, in which it sort of split the difference, I guess, and found that the defendant could be found guilty of attempted possession of that which the defendant didn't receive, and then, of course, guilty of possession for possession of that which he did receive. Why should we not at least apply that rationale in this case?
May I answer?
Sure.
In under federal law, when there is an attempted possession, that attempted possession carries the same offense as a prescribed offense. So in those federal cases where you have attempted possession, there isn't any benefit accruing to the defendant because he is charged and convicted and sentenced to the same amount as the actual offense, and that's 21 U.S.C. Section 846. That's the attempted possession, or the attempted federal statute. In this case, that's why the defendant was not charged with attempted possession. because he either possessed it or he didn't possess it. And so in this particular instance, as federal law has noted, and in United States versus Jackson, that there would be a benefit accruing to the defendant according to prudent police work. And significantly, in United States versus Jackson,
Are you saying that he wasn't charged with attempted possession, as Chief Justice just asked you?
In this case.
In this case, because that would be a lesser penalty, not because it was the wrong charge, just a lesser penalty, and so that would be bad police work. Is that what you were saying?
No, if I said that, I misspoke then. No, I was not. May I answer and conclude? I was not the grand jury prosecutor. I believe that they have the information to have charged with possession. But if we were to knock this down to a possession, even at this point, if the lesser included, of course, which we couldn't do, it would still be accruing a benefit. I mean, it's a public policy implication of accruing a benefit upon a defendant for the police taking out some drugs prior to a delivery. So with that whole attempt, Justice Moyer's question was, shouldn't you do what the United States versus Jackson did and have the charge with attempted possession? I believe that the facts indicate that there was constructive possession and it was properly charged.
You just sort of observed, you charged with active possession, a little amount less than attempted possession, without the movement in there.
Right, when there is such a thing as constructive possession. Yeah. And in United States versus Jackson, the co-defendant was a Hebe, who had claimed that he should only be charged with the actual possession of the lesser amount. And what the Sixth Circuit did, with I believe two sentences at page 1226 regarding the replacement, they found it was sufficient evidence alone that there was a large quantity of mail from Nigeria and it was originally present inside the picture frame. That's the extent of their analysis. The other analysis regarding implausible story and general keen interest in the arrival of a package, which certainly is what we have here, the Sixth Circuit found that that was sufficient. It was originally mail and it was originally in the picture frame.
Just before you sit down, I want to be sure I understand the facts. Did the authorities remove heroin to the point where there was less than 50 grams? Is that our problem here?
You mean so they couldn't be charged with bulk?
No. I want to know why they're not guilty of possessing these drugs. They had some heroin there, some cocaine, and some methadone, I think, that they received, that the defendant received.
Because he, as the defendant claimed, he didn't have knowledge at all of the package. So he could either have knowledge of what was sent or no knowledge at all.
Yeah, but we're talking about the fact that we're here because they removed part of the drugs. Now, when they removed part of the drugs, did they reduce it below the threshold for the greater charge?
Yes, they did.
All right, the only thing I can find is in heroin.
Well, and in the cocaine, the actual amount delivered was 59.87 grams. He was charged with bulk in a major drug offender specification.
And how many grams is it for bulk amount in cocaine?
Well, over 1,000 grams is what he was indicted and convicted of.
And that's what was originally in the package.
That was what was originally in the package.
And the penalty is greater for having 1,000 grams than it is for having 60 grams?
Yes, it is.
I thought that it fell between 250 and 250.
Well, for heroin, more than 50 grams, but less than 250. Yes. And so that's why I was remanded for resentencing for lesser time. So there was a benefit that accrued to the defendant based upon the actions of the police, which I believe is a major...
That's good. Thank you.
Just a small point, but the appellee says that there were 999.87 grams of cocaine, just under 1,000 grams. You said there were over 1,000 grams of cocaine. Is that right? That's your
opinion? Yes, he was indicted over 1,000 grams of cocaine.
Thank you, Ms. Osterby. Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
That the proof there was detrimental to the red salt. Probably made super rats.
Thank you. please report. Mr. Chairman, Council, County Public Defender Office, here on behalf of Mark Sadler, the defendant appellee in this matter. Your Honor, this is not a complicated case. The issue is one of sufficiency of evidence. Whether or not the state presented enough evidence to convince a rational prior fact that the defendant constructively possessed drugs that were never delivered to him.
Now, there's no doubt some drugs were delivered to him, correct?
Absolutely.
And the Court of Appeals basically did not overturn that court decision, correct?
Correct.
And so your client did not appeal that Court of Appeals decision, correct? From the Court of Appeals to what?
Yeah, you did. We denied the cross appeal.
Actually, Your Honor, we had a cross appeal on different issues, not on whether or not there was sufficiency. We never challenged sufficiency of evidence to on the actus reus of possession, of the drugs were delivered. We did, however, in the appellate court, challenge the mens rea of knowingly receiving the package. We did not appeal that to this court.
That's what I meant. We did not appeal that issue to this court. So therefore, when it's remanded, if we accepted your proposition as remanded, he still has standing conviction on the lesser amount.
Correct.
When you opened your state or your opened your argument, counsel, you said that this defendant was convicted of constructive possession of drugs he never possessed. But you say never possessed as if that's really key. And what we're talking about is constructive possession. So why do you suggest that the delivery of the full amount is critical? That would go to actual rather than constructive possession, would it not?
Certainly, Your Honor. I didn't mean to mislead the court in that way. Perhaps I should have said that the defendant was convicted of constructively possessing drugs that he never constructively possessed.
Okay.
You have your fact that the drugs were not delivered to him, or rather, the entire amount of drugs was not delivered to him.
Why is that important when this concept is constructive possession?
Oh, that's absolutely important.
Well, that's... Well, tell me why, because I know actual possession and constructive are entirely different conceptually. So explain to me why you're equating them.
I don't mean to de-equate them. I would suggest, however, that because the drugs were not delivered to him, at that point we need to consider what evidence there is that the defendant ever constructively possessed.
Correct.
These drugs.
Right. And how do we look at that? Do we as it's in Jackson and some other brief of the state, do we look at the listing of circumstances that provide a nexus between the defendant and the package?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so.
What do you say?
I would suggest that this is not legally unprecedented or unusual case. I believe the standard that this court should apply is that which has been applied in the numerous cases cited both by appellee and appellant in this
right.
case, which is plain old constructive possession. Did the defendant have the ability to exercise dominion and control over this package?
How do we decide that? That phrasing, does it go to the circumstances that provide a nexus? Is that how we decide about did he have ability to exercise dominion and control?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The suggestion that I think, to be honest, Your Honor, I'm just a little uncomfortable with the phrasing of nexus. I believe it sounds like an avoidance of the fact that under an analysis of standard constructive possession, is there ability to exercise dominion and control? It's not here. So the state is trying to avoid that, what they perceive as a benefit to the defendant, by arguing, well, there's a nexus and we're pretty close. Under standard constructive possession analysis, which whatever other case you choose, the question is simply, was there ability to exercise dominion and control over the entire amount of drugs, or actually over the drugs that were removed from the package? We simply have to go back in time and place that Federal Express office in Independence, Ohio, when they removed the drugs from the package. Beyond that, obviously, the defendant had no ability to exercise dominion and control over the drugs that are being sold. At that point, could Mark Sadler...
Let me stop. Is where they were removed, the drugs were removed at the UPS office? I was thinking it was the police station.
I'm not certain whether...
Maybe it doesn't deserve it, but it's, it may also, because it seems like that's a, that means that his ability to exercise dominion and control ceased sooner than if they transported to the police station, I guess.
I'm not certain, Ron. I know the package was seized at that point.
We'll find it.
Yeah, I know that there was a search warrant gotten, and I'm not sure where they actually opened the package. But certainly the seizure, I would suggest, limits his ability to exercise dominion and control over whatever's in it.
Well, they took some of them out, I think, at the original location to have them tested, and then took them to the police station to have them tested again.
Yeah, that is correct, Your Honor. And that was, Chief Justice Moyer asked about the 999.87 grams that were actually that were weighed. That was less, approximately 1 gram for the on-site testing, which is how they got over 1,000 grams.
If the Court of Appeals held it, Helen did not constructively possess the amount removed from the package before he took active possession, but he knowingly possessed, and they give 59 grams of cocaine, 20 grams of heroin. That is not an appeal before us. The knowingly possessed, the lesser amount is not an appeal before us. So we are not really judging whether he, yeah, what we're really looking at is whether we can take his mouth out. That was really looking at that simple issue of whether police can take his mouth out and find him still charged with the full amount of package.
I believe so, Your Honor. I think I would perhaps phrase it differently. I believe what we're looking at is, under these facts and circumstances, whether constructive possession is in fact proved. And here the police did take the drugs out, and here constructive possession is not proven. However, the case law is clear that under different circumstances, it can be proven. And I believe Chief Justice Moyer referenced some of them. For example, Mr. Sadler had a tracking number or shipping documents related to it, or there was testimony, as there were in some of these cases, by an accomplice indicating that Mr. Sadler had directed his associates to put the package into the mail. And in fact, the police under those cases wouldn't even have to deliver the package at all. Prior to that, at the time they had intercepted the package, the defense in those cases had already exercised dominion and control over them, had the ability to exercise dominion and control over them. Here in this case, because of prudent police work, the crime of possession of all the drugs was not committed. And I would suggest to this court that the state's argument that the defendant is receiving a benefit because the police prevented him from completing the crime, and therefore we should convict him of the completed crime anyway, is, to my way of thinking, a bit absurd.
Well, conversely, in your argument, that if he knew, established law now, it's not appealed. Your defendant knew he was getting some drugs, he didn't know how much. And so if the police had left the whole amount in, he would have gotten convicted of the whole amount.
Correct.
Counselor, if we affirm this case, we're obviously going to hear that we're hamstringing law enforcement efforts. I mean, not that we are not used to that kind of criticism. We are, but that's going to be the argument. We're just making it tougher for the police to do their job. Does this happen? The reason I was trying to get with your learned adversary the facts is because how often do they substitute so that you go below the threshold margin, the threshold point for charges under the code with regard to a greater amount or a lesser amount? You know what I'm asking. I'm just even having trouble asking the question. But that's what's bothering me in this case. Does this happen often?
I honestly don't know, Your Honor. I've never seen a substitute amount case like this.
All right, well, let's start then with the cocaine, because you are familiar with what the code says. He actually received,
correct,
possessed, less than 1,000 grams.
Correct.
Is there a break-off at 1,750 and 500 and 250?
Actually, the gradings, as I recall, for powder cocaine goes 0 to 5 grams, 5 to 10, 10 to 25, and from there, I'm not sure. 25 to 100, maybe 100 to 1,000 from there. I'm honestly not certain of the grade levels. And I don't know to what extent the police consider and they're determining how much drugs to remove, or indeed, should they remove all the drugs, whether, you know, they need to be concerned about, well, if we deliver 101 grams, at least we can be certain of actual possession of 101 grams. I don't know to what extent the police take those factors into consideration. I would suggest, however, the idea that this is this decision will somehow hamstring law enforcement, that when law enforcement intercepts drugs and successfully stops someone from possessing them, that is a victory for law enforcement, right? This court should not overlook that. That's their goal, and they successfully did it, and they did it in this case. When law enforcement stops a murder, a robbery, or a rape from happening, and then this court says that, well, the murder didn't happen, the robbery didn't happen, or the rape didn't happen, no one says that law enforcement was hamstrung by that decision. This decision should not be viewed any differently, and this court should not, I would argue, consider it any differently. I don't think it's logically any different. As a result of the prudent and very wise police tactics in this case, Mr. Sadler was prevented from completing the actus reus of constructively possessing, or rather actually possessing, the larger amount of drugs.
I shouldn't have asked the prosecuting attorney this, but what is the advantage they hope to achieve by taking the drugs out of the package?
I believe it's twofold, Your Honor. First, I believe they intend to keep the drugs from going out the back door, and then thereby dispersing in the community, because, you know, again, the idea here is to keep these drugs out of the community.
Okay.
Second, I think of less importance, to keep the evidence together for future prosecution, so that policies of the law enforcement officials in U.S. versus Jackson. In that case,
I heard you but I can't begin to start.
Charged with and prosecuted for attempted possession.
You did.
And the analysis, therefore, went to vote was a substantial step towards possessing any drugs committed. And I believe under these facts, it would have very likely been, or at least a very arguable, attempted possession of a full amount of drugs. Law enforcement should not be considered as somehow hindered or hampered when a person is only convicted for what they've actually done, which is why I started this argument by, laying out for this court that frankly all we have here is a man who was convicted of possessing drugs that he did not possess, constructively possessing drugs that he did not constructively possess. With that, Your Honors, I would ask this honorable court to affirm the decision of the 8th District Court of Appeals.
Let me ask you a question. If the police here had kept the package intact,
everybody's come here and they've spent the money on it,
and then
they
posed as an UPS driver and delivered, actually put the package in the hand of the defendant, in your view, I assume that would be actual possession. They need nothing more. Is that right?
Certainly.
So I guess I'm going to ask the prosecutor this, but I'm not sure I understand the concern about. I know the concern about the drug getting away somehow, being flushed out or down out the back door, but if the police have set it up properly, why would that be a problem? If all they have to do is send an undercover agent with the package, looks like a UPS person, and here's the package, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan takes it, thank you, he has possession. But the police are
arrested.
What's the problem with it?
But you still have to test what's in the package before you deliver it.
Certainly, Your Honor.
So that would be taking the gram that they took from here. That's why I keep asking the facts. Does that take it down from a threshold of 1,000 to 999, and is that a lesser charge?
Well, actually, yes, that's correct, Your Honor. I considered that. I'd like to correct that. Because the 999 grams is the only amount actually that would have been hypothetically actually possessed, then the defendant would have been guilty of actual possession of less than 1,000 grams here. And then if they were to argue constructive possession for that 1 gram they took out. And under different circumstances, it is very possible to, as these cases show, to constructively possess packages that are not yet delivered to you. You order someone to do it, you have a tracking number, you have the ability to control that package. Here, there's no way Mark Stadler could have gone to that Federal Express office and gotten that package. If he had called up and said, "Hi, I'm Mark Stadler. I'm not the person who sent the package, the person to whom it's addressed. I have no other information about it. But I'd like to tell you where to send that package." They would have told him where to go, frankly.
Well, it was to go, I mean, it was to address to the address where the jury believed he lived.
Correct.
Okay, so he is, I mean, when he calls Federal Express, he says, "I live at, you know, 100 Elm Street. You have a package for 100 Elm Street." And they say, "Well, yeah." "Well, can you bring that on out?" "Yeah." Why would we say he couldn't do that?
I don't believe that Federal Express operates that.
Well, they, you know what? They get paid to send the package where it's addressed.
I believe they get paid to send the package to the person to whom it's addressed.
Only if you say, "Got him, sign."
No,
and they leave him all the time. I mean, they do. Yeah. We all know that. But the point is, I guess I'm not clear on why we would say, since it was his address. I mean, we can't overlook that. It's the address. So it wasn't, here's a package to Gene Brown, and it's just going to float out there until Gene Brown shows up at the FedEx office. Instead, it goes to the address. Nobody holds it at the FedEx office because it didn't require a signature by Gene Brown. They accepted the signature. Well, who knows what FedEx would have done, but this gentleman signed for it. He signed his own name.
Correct, Your Honor. I would like to suggest also that there's no evidence for record as to what Federal Express would have done under, you know, what their contracts normally allow for or what was specified in this case.
Did anybody ever figure out who Gene Brown is?
The best of my knowledge, the record contractual prosecutor who filled this in, I believe she was never found. I think there's sort of an implicit assumption that she hasn't.
It's just a pseudonym. So, right.
I just have one question for you, something you said. Did I understand you correctly that whenever the police test drugs, the amount they use to test them reduces the overall amount that an individual can be charged with?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Your Honor. But if they do test the drugs prior to delivering them to the person, then that person will only actually possess whatever was actually delivered to them, certainly.
In an actual possession.
I understand it. I'm talking about all drug cases because the police weigh the amount and then they take a certain sum and test it. You're not saying that it's the fact that sometimes they're left without any drugs left after the test.
Right. Under most circumstances, the drugs are taken from the individual after possession. The whole amount is proven prior to the lowering.
I just wanted to.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Thompson. Ms. Austria, you've used your time, so it may take 30 seconds. Start you off. Justice Douglas is probably right about concern about hamstringing law enforcement or whatever, but what's your response to my question to Mr. Thompson about why couldn't a delivery be set up in such a way that they don't need to worry about losing the evidence? Can't they do that?
Yes, they could do that, Your Honor, but it is commonplace practice, and in fact, all the cases that we have, even from the federal and the state court, does show that this is routinely done not only to protect the public, as my colleague over here stated, Mr. Thompson. There have been cases where, and in fact, one of the federal cases where a package goes in, what happens is there was testimony before the jury that they wait about 10 to 15 minutes to see if anybody else is going to descend on the scene. If perhaps the package is really for somebody else, and they get, they perhaps the ringleader in. So they have reasons for doing that, to see if other people will gather. In that time, yes, they have slotted somebody, but there are times in the city where you have backyards and bodies and you really can't see, and you can't get a good eyeshot or surveillance as to what's going on. The package can go in and can go out. It has happened, and those are real concerns, and that's why the police do it. And what this case would do if it is not reversed, and as Justice Stratton has stated, the central issue is, can police take out an amount and still charge, and can the prosecutor still charge with the original amount? Let's take that premise to say if no, it's only the actual possession amount, what would happen if police officers retrieved a package of drugs and actually enhanced the package and put more in? Well, then, what's the constructive possession? Was it the intent, or is it charged with the actual possession of not the enhancement? Because that's the practical implication or the effect that a decision would have when you have law enforcement officials actually controlling the degree of a felony. And that's what this case is. You have law enforcement officials, their actions controlling the degree of the felony. And what's to say they can't put more in for purposes of penalty enhancement?
Oh, nobody, no police officers would do that. And that's the second. Would police officers ever do that?
I'm saying the practical...
Or prosecutors?
That's
a frightening thought for a prosecutor to stand here and say police will add additional drugs to a package in order to enhance a penalty.
I'm not saying that they would. I'm saying that they could. It would be allowable legally. And the practical implication, we're talking theoretically, looking at an impact of a particular decision and what that means down the road for future decisions. If you take that concept conceptually and you apply it, if you accept the fact that law enforcement officials can control the degree of sentencing or the degree of the felony, and in this case, as Justice Stratton also noted, the actual possession conviction was not appealed. Therefore, by implication, perhaps this defendant was happy he was only found guilty of the actual possession, thereby attending to the fact that he had some knowledge of the
fact. That all is very nice, but the problem is you are asking us to write a definition of constructive possession that I don't find anyplace else, and that's my concern. I don't care about all this other stuff, frankly, because we're supposed to write a rule of law in this case. Why we took it, why I hope it's taken it away. It gives some direction to everyone, law enforcement, defense, and so forth. If we write it based upon some of the things you suggest, we have a definition that is going to be an Ohio definition that doesn't match up with, seems to me, with any other definition of constructive possession.
So
that's the problem I have. Now, how do you get me out of that?
Let me offer you the definition that the state wished to offer during its original, which is found in United States versus Marcellana, which is the Third Circuit case. 709, said 7863, citing United States versus Massey out of the Tenth Circuit. Constructive possession, which is the dominion and control, is the ability to reduce an object to actual possession. And certainly in this case, the defendant had the ability to reduce the object to actual possession, but for the actions of the police officers, he would have received the entire amount of the package.
Thank you.
For these reasons, the state of Ohio respectfully requests that the court reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeal and reinstate the conviction of constructive possession. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised to our opinion.